about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there
brains
is
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart. You don't have any idea why
because
we're doing
so smart.
Most of the things that we're doing. But here's the deal.
Hard work pays off eventually some of the time. Procrastination pays off right now.
All
the
time.
Yeah.
And you know what? I tell you, even though that's kind of meant in jest, that is exactly why we procrastinate.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy.
I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Art Markman.
And this is Two Guys on Your Head. Today, procrastination.
Something we've talked about frequently is that we are wired to do the thing that feels good in the short term over the things that are rewarding for us to do in the long term. And a lot of the things that will be rewarding to have done in the long term require an awful lot of work that is not necessarily as enjoyable as some of the things that you could do in the short term.
Right. And of course, there's an evolutionary advantage of that, right? Because how we learn to function and survive in the world, our brains have taught us, our brains have learned. It's funny to think about all that, right? Because we are our brains, but our brains have taught us that if there's something that is advantageous in the moment, well, there's an understandable attraction to that. And it's only the last part of our brains to have evolved, you know, the frontal lobes that say, you know, if you do that now, because we have consciousness, we have the remarkable capacity to think into the future.
It's very hard to use, as Bob was saying, those frontal lobes, fairly newly evolved system, to buckle down and say, you know what, I'm going to bring the future into the present and say, this thing that feels so far off actually requires the amount of energy in my motivational system that is normally reserved for something that is really in the here and now. I mean, one of the things that each of us has to do is to figure out what motivates us to excel. And there are big differences. So one of the differences has to do with people's resting level of arousal. So some people are naturally low arousal people. These are the people who need small thermonuclear devices detonated beneath them in order to get them to do anything. And then there are some people who are naturally high arousal people. And high arousal people get stuff done. They got to be working. They got to be getting stuff done all the time. And one of the reasons it's important to recognize this difference is because the high arousal people can't teach the low arousal people to do what they do because they're fundamentally just different folks.
That's a great point.
And so what you need to do, if you're a high arousal person and you're dealing with a low arousal person who's just putting stuff off and putting stuff off, what you need to do is to get them in touch with another low arousal person who is manifestly successful and say, go learn from them how to deal with the task that you have to complete.
Yeah. And you know, what Art was just saying reminds me of the show that we did on celebration and the importance of celebrating. I think Art described this, the short-term accomplishments that may seem small compared to the big thing that we're going after, but yet celebrating those small accomplishments propels us to the next one and the next one and the next one. Then pretty soon you get to the thing, right? I mean, all of us have tasks that are onerous. My least favorite thing to do in the world is to do our taxes. And then a long time ago, I read this study where they went to a school, a bunch of fifth graders, terrible at math, and they had a problem, you know, getting the kids excited about math. So they decided what they're going to do is give these kids math worksheets. And they were going to do this over 6 days in an after-school program. And the only thing, they had 42 worksheets for the kids to work on. And in one group of kids, they gave them all 42 worksheets. And they said, okay, over the next 6 days, we're going to work through these 42 worksheets. Another group of kids they brought in, they gave them 7 of the 42 pages on the first day. So we're going to get these 7 pages done today. Right? And then the next day we'll get them. Now they're all working the same amount of time. They're all doing the same thing. And then after the study was over, they looked at the accomplishment in math, their attitudes about math. And you know where this is going already. Is the kids who did decide, my goal is to get these 7 pages done today. That was what the goal was every day. Much more positive on every measure. Right. Because they had. So I decided I would adopt that for my taxes. So my first goal in doing my taxes is to get all my stuff in one room in my house. And then I celebrate.
The longer you wait, OK, the better the excuse you have when you fail. You know, if I put the full week in and then still fail, then I would have to come to grips with the fact that there's something I don't know how to do. And that can be a blow to your self-esteem. So I cushion that blow by kind of constructing an environment in which I couldn't possibly have succeeded in the first place. And curing that requires changing your orientation to failure to one that says, you know, I can't possibly succeed unless I put in the full effort. And even then I might not succeed. But if I put in the full effort and fail, I'll get better the next time. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you teach this to children? You know, it's hard enough to work with this with myself on a daily basis.
Sure. Children, how do you do that?
But there is a way, but there's also a way to teach it badly. We live in the age of the helicopter parent. And the danger with that is ultimately all kids need to learn to get stuff done somehow on their own.
Exactly. I think many parents are dismayed when throughout their child's lives living at home, they've made such wonderful choices for their children. And then their children leave and they seem to go nuts. And what people don't recognize in that is that you're making wonderful choices for your child. And your child is getting no practice making good choices.
And making bad choices.
And making bad choices. You know, often people set themselves to work and work until they can't stand it anymore. And then they stop. And there's a downside to that. Because when you do that, stopping is reinforcing. And what you learn from that, below your conscious awareness, is that stopping feels good. So stopping happens earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier until pretty soon you don't even start anymore. Yeah. When I have students come to me in the music school and they say, you know, I need to be practicing more. I say, well, how much do you think you can practice every day? And somebody will say, 3 hours. I know they can't practice 3 hours a day. So I say, here's what we're going to do. You get 1 hour a day to practice. And when your 1 hour's up, you can't practice anymore. And their question to me is, well, what if I don't learn stuff from my lesson? I said, pity. Now, a couple things happen. One thing is that hour a day becomes precious. And you're stopping thinking, I can't wait to get back to this. Instead of stopping thinking, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm over. You change the way you approach the task each time you go back to it.
Next week, we'll talk about the psychology of hope with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. You can subscribe to the podcast of Two Guys on Your Head in iTunes, Stitcher, or on SoundCloud, and leave us a review while you're there. We'd love to know what you think of the show. David Alvarez is our engineer, and I'm Rebecca McEnroy. I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.